Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Modern Cotton Story podcast, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Ray Daniels, Seed Sustainability Manager here at BASF, as well as manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton program and co-host of today's program. I'm also joined by Gertsy Textile Organization partner, Bob Anishat. Bob, how are you? It's been a few. How are things going?
Ray, I'm doing great. It has been a little while. Hope you're doing well. I'm having a good day. And it's nice to be on the program.
That's great. I mean, I'm doing good too, Bob. It's been, I can't help it with the season being upon us. It's spring, things are warming up. I feel like in some parts of the country, farmers are getting the itch to plant. And I know we're seeing cotton being planted in Southern Texas and elsewhere. So we're kind of getting into that time of year where things are getting busy. And I know the market's ramping up. So it's a good time to be in the cotton business and get going. Thanks for joining today, Bob. And today we're going to be talking cotton tech, which is unique compared to some of the things we've talked about in the past. But before we begin, I would like to set the backdrop for today's podcast. I don't know how many of you know this, but I'm an avid runner and I spend a lot of time outdoors, whether that be running or even connecting with cotton growers in the field. You know, and for all the great sustainability benefits that cotton delivers, one thing that has always been a challenge is the ability from a moisture wicking perspective to keep the wearer dry and cool. And, you know, when the temperatures, as I mentioned, heat up, people get active and they often reach for fabrics made of nylon or other synthetic materials, which we know is not made from a sustainable source like cotton, but mainly from petroleum. And so when you couple synthetic sources with the downstream effects of microplastics and other items, clothing using this material is simply not sustainable and not in the way cotton is today and it can be in the future. So I'd like to introduce today's guest, Graham Stewart. Graham is with Fiber 52, a company that has developed an innovative prepare for dye, if I said that right, PFD process that leverages the natural moisture wicking characteristics of cotton. It rivals the wicking properties of synthetic fibers. So Graham, tell us a little bit about yourself and how are you doing today?
I'm also doing well, Ray. Thanks. Excited to be on the pod. Great. Yeah, to give you a little bit about Fiber 52, I'll try and make this as brief as possible. You know, I began Fiber 52 because I was operating in dye houses. In my background, I've dyed a lot of natural fibers, but in this case, I tended to notice in the dye houses that the recipes were so long, that it was taking so long to process cotton. They were using strong alkalis. And I just thought there's a lot of wastage, a lot of effluent, a lot of challenges here. Surely there's a better way to do it. And I've got to be honest, it's taken me a while because this was all trial and error. A lot of error, I can tell you. But what I did is try to introduce friendlier product in processing cotton. And that's pretty much how Fiber 52 was born, in that I started to introduce bioproducts instead of the heavy chemicals that are traditionally used. And also that allowed me to lower the temperatures, use less water, less energy. So that's it in a nutshell, right?
So why do you call it Fiber 52?
Yeah, good question. Two reasons. It's the number of chromophores in American cotton. There's 52 of them. The other thing was that most of the trademark names are gone. It's really hard to get a trademark name for cotton. And so Fiber 52 was, you know, the way we made it. So that's the background there, Ray.
Graham, I'm going to get a little geeky, which could be dangerous. Just saying, but cotton's naturally hydrophobic, right? And after going through the traditional prep for dye process, cotton becomes hydrophilic and becomes what most people recognize as a or absorbent kind of product. You know, that's what cotton absorbs. Can you go into how Fiber 52 simplifies the PFD process and enhances cotton's naturally hydrophobic qualities? And so that could basically so that cotton can naturally wick, you know, I think you talk about that.
Yeah, certainly, Bob. Thanks. And by the way, it's not at all a geeky question, but I think it's an interesting one. And, you know, as Ray actually introduced himself as a runner, you know, there's all the discussion around microfibers getting into the sea, the water, you know, on our water resources. What happens with cotton processing is that there's a saponification process. So very heavy alkalis used to get the waxes and vegetable matters and so on out of cotton, which they nicely call trash in the industry. So getting the trash out is done with heavy alkali. Pretty much what we do at Fiber 52 is avoid that process. So we keep the heavy alkali out, and therefore we leave cotton in its more natural state. But in its more natural state, cotton isn't hydrophilic, it's hydrophobic. And therefore it's doing some of the things that we all associate with nylon and polyester and those man-made fibers that we all associate with in sport. But we leave cotton less damaged. I think that's an important thing to say, that we leave it in its natural state. It is less damaged. And I think, Bob, to answer your question, in processing cotton, and Fiber 52, there are two forks in the road. Track one is, you know, we, as you mentioned, the PFD, which is prepare for dye. It's a bleaching process. It whitens the cotton, gets the trash out. But what happens is, in traditional processing, the bath at the end of that process is dropped, refilled, heated, washed off, and there may even be another bath. You know, so there's a lot of water being used. We don't do that with Fiber 52. With this process, with the natural process, everything gets reacted. So what you have at the end of that PFD bleach process is a fairly natural dye bath as well. So you don't have to drop it. And to put that into numbers, that saves around 10,000 liters of water per 1,000 kilograms of fiber, which is a lot. Particularly as you may do it two or three times, you know. So once you multiply that throughout the whole process, it makes a big difference in water usage and water saving. The second track, or the second fork in the road, is looking at the demand, the textile demand. Let's say you're processing towels or something. You don't want a hydrophobic towel. You want something that's...
That wouldn't work. That'd be tough.
It's not going to do you a lot of good. And so, you know, in that case, we say to manufacturers, look, if that's your end use, drop the dye bath, drop the PFD bath, soap it off as you wish, you know, do the normal soaping process and make the cotton hydrophobic. You don't get the performance product at the end of the day, but I have to say, at the moment, we're getting more interest in the performance side of this, of Fiber 52, than we are with, you know, the hydrophilic process. So, and to your point, we're having a lot of really interesting discussions with sporting goods brands.
Well, that's pretty exciting. So two things stand out to me. One is towels that repel water. Those sound like hotel towels, most of the ones I've used. And those, I can tell you, are just not very useful. But I tell you, the one thing it stands out is, from a sustainability perspective, is on the hydrophobic piece, is that you're simply removing a lot of the work that goes into stripping the cotton and cleaning it, as you said, and removing the trash, and simply keeping that in place, which, to my mind, so like you said, saves a lot of water and energy, but that has a huge implication on sustainability. So I think that's pretty important. Have you compared, you mentioned the performance fitness piece. Have you compared the performance qualities of the man-made moisture-wicking fabric to Fiber 52's treated cotton fabric? I mean, does your cotton stand up or even outperform the synthetics?
Yeah, we have done a lot of work from that point of view, Ray. We've conducted trials at the wonderful facility at NC State University, in that they've got a comfort lab. It's called a TPAT lab. And the new test, which is called, it's called a heat flux test, is they replicate human skin. And they replicate what happens when your body heats up, you know, as you're exercising. And what we got back from them was three graphs. So we didn't know what we were going to get, because we weren't quite sure what was happening with Fiber 52. And this is quite recent, by the way. And what they did, they tested polyester, cotton, and Fiber 52 against each other. And I'll try and explain what went on. We have a graph for each. If you look at the polyester graph, it's pretty much like Mount Everest. You know, it goes up to a peak, and that's because it's moving moisture pretty quick. The problem is then it saturates and crashes. So there's the downgrade in the mountain. And at that point, polyester's sticking. So it's measuring the stickiness of polyester as it sticks to the skin, or in this case, the synthetic skin. The cotton graph is a bit more like an English hill, you know, it's like a molehill. It goes quickly, rounds up to the top where it gets saturated, and then crashes pretty much like polyester as it sticks to your skin. And we all know that feeling in cotton. And so what we were interested in is Fiber 52, you know, how's our graph going to look? And we were surprised. I'll be honest with you, we were very surprised in that we had a slight gradient, and then it flatlined for over an hour. And they explained to us at NC State, and we debated this, that the guys there who are used to doing a lot of this kind of testing explained that what has happened is that you have got some absorption. We didn't know that. They say you've almost got the same absorption as normal cotton, but you've also got a release, and it's not hanging on to that moisture. So the reason you've got a flat line is that you've got this constant, consistent comfort, which was a big surprise to them. And in fact, they did say that it's pretty much like wool, in that, you know, wool absorbs 40% of its own weight before it even feels moist or damp. We were delighted to hear this, you know, that we are getting moisture away from the body, and that cotton's not sticking to the body. So we have a natural performance cotton.
Wow, that's incredible. That's neat. I mean, I could tell you, I know what the feeling of polyester or saturated cotton feels like sticking to the skin on for a long while. Everybody knows that feeling. It's not always the most comfortable. So that's incredible. You mentioned you're working with some sporting or performance lines. Any cool partners you can tell us about or able to share with us?
Firstly, all our partners are cool, especially those with nice podcasts, you know. Our learned friends, our lawyers don't allow us to share names or brand names, but I can tell you that we are getting a lot of interest from brands all around the world. You know, we've got a diverse audience from sport to fashion to industrial wear. And like this morning, I've just been talking to some guys in Italy who are one of the oldest mills in Italy who are in the luxury world. You know, so we do have a wide range of cool partners, let's say. We moved first of all into Europe pretty quickly, because mainly because of my background in Italy, and I have a lot of friends and colleagues who are in the Italian textile industry. They were able to get into processing pretty quick. So from raw material, raw cotton, we were loose cotton, then to yarn, then to garments and fabric in all its different forms. The great thing is that there in Italy is a very exalted lab, let's say. And the professor who runs that lab, and he he is probably the most sophisticated lab I've ever seen, but he got very, very interested in fiber 52. And everything that we do in Italy now goes into that lab. And he gets us the test results almost the same day. And we're getting fabulous results. For instance, you know, a lot of people say, well, you've got this natural barrier, you know, it's hydrophobic. How on earth do you get the dye stuff on there? And when you do, is it going to rub off again? You know, are you going to have fastness problems and so on? And I'm pleased to say we don't. And in fact, the fastnesses with fiber 52 are just as comparable as traditional and sometimes better. And our levelness seems to be better, but of course we've got this performance attributes. But if any of your listeners wish to learn more about, you know, fiber 52, then perhaps at the end of the at the end of the show, we can put something in the show notes.
Hey Graham, question. You've talked a lot about cleaning, in effect, cleaning up parts of the dye process, right? Or making that a bit more sustainable, right? And which is admirable. Our interest, of course, is understanding how can cotton become even more attractive to textile companies, clothing companies, and so forth. How do you see it really? How do you see fiber 52 potentially impacting the cotton industry and how cotton is consumed by the textile industry?
Yeah, interesting, Bob. I think, the sustainable impact of fiber 52 in dyeing, let's discuss that to begin with. We all know that dyeing and coloration can be a bit of a dirty business. And we just try to make that as simple and natural as possible. Fiber 52 is actually a simpler process. It's a shorter process. And, you know, to your point, as well as today's discussion, we're part of a value chain. And I know all the good work that's being done by E3 in growing cotton. And we hope to continue that by being a cleaner part of the value chain than currently exists, let's say. So it's a continuation of all that good work that you guys do. I think in that, we're processing at, you know, the lower temperatures, shorter times, less water, less chemicals, and that can't be bad. We're not costing any more. There's no further capital outlay. The dye stuffs are the same. The dosages are the same. We get excellent repeatability. And we believe we create a superior, more natural cotton. And I think that that has to be competitive because let's face it, cotton's a natural fiber, you know, versus the petrochemical based fibers that we're all used to using, particularly in sport. And I do see cotton taking market share and over the, you know, near and medium future because of all the publicity and all the pressure in ESG that's involved in industry today. So I think that cotton's got a great future.
We love to hear that. And I know our listeners and our farmers and everybody loves to hear that about cotton's future. And I agree, the sustainability aspect of cotton, the way it's grown versus things that are more petroleum-based fibers is incredible. It's so really not a comparison. But, you know, speaking of which, Graham, you kind of alluded to this about where you see things going, but what are your long-term goals and aspirations for Fiber 52? I mean, from an innovative idea to a fully fledged offering, where do you see Fiber 52 in 10 years?
I see a wide adaptation of Fiber 52 in the pressures are there. Let's just go there to begin with. The pressures are there, and Bob knows more about this than I do. At governmental level, you know, there's pressure for us all to change. You know, even looking at the United Nations are putting statements out about where we should be by 2030, and you know, where we all need to be going, where we need to be heading. But I see Fiber 52 as being adapted, as the process for processing cotton in the next 10 years, particularly here in America to begin with, because it's easier for us to concentrate in the US. But, you know, this process is going to be rolled out around the world. And one of the reasons you haven't seen us before now is that our lawyers really didn't want us going out into the world where this process can be in another part of the world in seconds. It's very easy to replicate. And that's part of the problem. It's part of the advantage of Fiber 52, but the issue is we do have to protect our IP. So going forward, that's a big part of where we're going to have to be, is that we do need to make sure that this better process is benefiting everybody from a cost and from a sustainability standpoint. But also we want to try and, make something out of it ourselves financially, so we can grow the business. But also it's our objective not to sit on any profit. We're going to plow that straight back into Fiber 52 and maybe even extend it to other fibers also.
So over time for cotton, then, Graham, you see technologies like Fiber 52 really helping cotton to compete better opposite synthetics?
Absolutely, Bob. You know, as we've said, cotton being a natural fiber, our job at Fiber 52 is to help cotton stay more natural, be more competitive, in that if we can save power, if we can save energy, if we can save water, then definitely cotton remains competitive with synthetic fibers. That's a big part of our objective, is to be competitive. So I, as I've said before, I only see an upside to this, and I do see that cotton will be a more competitive and get a larger market share in the fiber space.
Wow, that's incredible. That sounds like so much about innovation in a space that that has such incredible impacts in terms of sustainability on the value of the market, the farmers and other participants can get from that. So thank you for that. Thank you, Graham, for joining us today and for this amazing discussion. Thank you. All, Graham, you mentioned earlier, this is a time where, you know, if people have questions, they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so? What's the best way for listeners to contact you if they have any further questions or want to learn more about Fiber 52?
Yeah, right, Ray. Definitely go to fiber52.com. There's a lot of information on there. But also, you can get in touch with us by going to fiber52.com. All our details are there. And so we welcome any of your listeners to get in touch with us. And obviously, we'd like to, continue the discussions. Thanks for a great pod, Ray. We appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And for our listeners, we'll include the website there and any other details in the show notes for today's session. So you can head over to Fiber 52 and learn more and reach out to Graham and his team and see how things are moving on that end and how they may be able to help you. So thank you for joining. Thank you, Bob, as always, for co-hosting today. It's always a pleasure to see you and be with you.
Thank you.
And, you're right. You're welcome. And I also like to thank all of our listeners who join us each podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's show and found everything you learned about Fiber 52 valuable and informative. And I hope it inspired you to think maybe a little bit differently around cotton. Should you have any questions, as I mentioned, about Fiber 52 today, we'll include that information in the show notes. But should you have any questions about the E3 Cotton program, you can also email me at e3cotton@basf.com. Additionally, you can check us out on Instagram and Facebook, learn about updates to the program, podcasts, and other interesting facts that we talk about when it comes to sustainable cotton at those handles at E3 Sustainable Cotton on, again, both Facebook and Instagram. Lastly, if you like this podcast or any of these podcasts, please be sure to follow us via your favorite podcast provider and tell your friends and invite them to join the podcast and check it out. Lastly, thank you all again. We'll see you next time.